Chapter 44. And the letters of the first table, while he set about mending a portion of the second, she was quite pleased at her powers, as he had acquired them in the days she painted illumined texts for the church fitting shop at Christminster. Nobody seemed likely to disturb them, and the pleasant twitter of birds, and rustle of October leafage, came in through an open window, and mingled with their talk. They were not, however, to be left thus snug and peaceful for long. About 12:30 there came footsteps on the gravel without. The old vicar and his churchwarden entered, and, coming up to see what was being done, seemed surprised to discover that a young woman was assisting. They passed on into an aisle, at which time the door again opened, and another figure entered, a small one, that of little time, who was crying. Sue had told him where he might find her between school hours, if he wished. She came down from her perch, and said, "What's the matter, my dear? I couldn't stay to eat my dinner in school, because they said he described how some boys had taunted him about his nominal mother," and Sue, grieved, expressed her indignation to Jude aloft. The child went into the churchyard, and Sue returned to her work. Meanwhile the door had opened again, and there shuffled in with a businesslike air the white-aproned woman who cleaned the church. Sue recognized her as one who had friends in Spring Street, whom she visited. The church cleaner looked at Sue, gaped, and lifted her hands, as he had evidently recognized Jude's companion as the latter had recognized her. Next came two ladies, and after talking to the charwoman they also moved forward, and as Sue stood reaching upward, watched her hand tracing the letters, and critically regarded her person in relief against the white wall, till she grew so nervous that she trembled visibly. They went back to where the others were standing, talking in undertones. And one said Sue could not hear which he's his wife, I suppose? Some say yes. Some say no, was the reply from the charwoman. Not? Then she ought to be, or somebody's, that's very clear. They've only been married a very few weeks, whether or no. A strange pair to be painting the two tables. I wonder Biles and Willis could think of such a thing as hiring those. The churchwarden supposed that Biles and Willis knew of nothing wrong, and then the other, who had been talking to the old woman, explained what she meant by calling them strange people. The probable drift of the subdued conversation which followed was made plain by the churchwarden breaking into an anecdote, in a voice that everybody in the church could hear, though obviously suggested by the present situation. "Well, now, it is a curious thing, but my grandfather told me a strange tale of a most immoral case that happened at the painting of the commandments, in a church out by Gamehead which is quite within a walk of this one. In them days commandments were mostly done in gilt letters on a black ground, and that's how they were out where I say, before the old church was rebuilded. It must have been somewhere about 100 years ago, that them commandments wanted doing up just as ours do here, and they had to get men from Aldbrickham to do 'em. Now they wished to get the job finished by a particular Sunday, so the men had to work late Saturday night, against their will, for overtime was not paid then as 'tis now. There was no true religion in the country at that date, neither among parsons, clerks, nor people, and to keep the men up to their work the vicar had to let them have plenty of drink during the afternoon. As evening drawed on they sent for some more themselves. Rum, by all account. It got later and later, and they got more and more fuddled, till at last they went a-putting their rum bottle and rummers upon the communion table, and drawed up a trestle or two, and sate round comfortable, and poured out again right hearty bumpers. No sooner had they tossed off their glasses than, so the story goes, they fell down senseless, one and all. How long they bode, so they didn't know, but when they came to themselves there was a terrible thunderstorm a-raging, and they seemed to see in the gloom a dark figure with very thin legs and a curious foot, a-standing on the ladder, and finishing their work. When it got daylight they could see that the work was really finished, and couldn't at all mind finishing it themselves. They went home, and the next thing they heard was that a great scandal had been caused in the church that Sunday morning, for when the people came and service began, all saw that the Ten Commandments was painted with the "us" left out. Decent people wouldn't attend service there for a long time, and the bishop had to be sent for to reconsecrate the church. That's the tradition as I used to hear it as a child. You must take it for what it is worth, but this case today has reminded me of it, as I say. The visitors gave one more glance, as if to see whether Jude and Sue had left the "us" out likewise, and then severally left the church, even the old woman at last. Sue and Jude, who had not stopped working, sent back the child to school, and remained without speaking, till, looking at her narrowly, he found as he had been crying silently. "Never mind, comrade," he said. "Know what it is. I can't bear that they, and everybody, should think people wicked, because they may have chosen to live their own way. It is really these opinions that make the best-intentioned people reckless, and actually become immoral. Never be cast down. It was only a funny story. Ah, but we suggested it. I am afraid I have done you mischief, Jude, instead of helping you by coming." To have suggested such a story was certainly not very exhilarating, in a serious view of their position. However, in a few minutes Sue seemed to see that their position this morning had a ludicrous side, and wiping her eyes she laughed. "It is droll, after all," she said, "that we two, of all people, with our queer history, should happen to be here painting the Ten Commandments. You a reprobate, and I in my condition. Oh dear." And with her hand over her eyes she laughed again silently and intermittently, till she was quite weak. "That's better," said Jude gaily. "Ah, we are right again, aren't we, little girl? Oh, but it is serious, all the same," she sighed as she took up the brush and righted herself. "Do you see they don't think we are married? They won't believe it. It is extraordinary." "I don't care whether they think so or not," said Jude. "I shan't take any more trouble to make them." They sat down to lunch which they had brought with them not to hinder time, and having eaten it were about to set to work anew, when a man entered the church, and Jude recognized in him the contractor Willis. He beckoned to Jude, and spoke to him apart. "Here I've just had a complaint about this," he said, with rather breathless awkwardness. "Don't wish to go into the matter, as of course I didn't know what was going on, but I am afraid I must ask you and her to leave off, and let somebody else finish this. It is best, to avoid all unpleasantness. I'll pay you for the week, all the same." Jude was too independent to make any fuss, and the contractor paid him, and left. Jude picked up his tools, and Sue cleansed her brush. Then their eyes met. "How could we be so simple as to suppose we might do this?" said she, dropping to her tragic note. "Of course we ought not, I ought not to have come. I had no idea that anybody was going to intrude into such a lonely place and see us." Jude returned. "Well, it can't be helped, dear, and of course I wouldn't wish to injure Willis's trade connection by staying." They sat down passively for a few minutes, proceeded out of the church, and overtaking the boy pursued their thoughtful way to Aldbrickham. Folly had still a pretty zeal in the cause of education, and, as was natural with his experiences, he was active in furthering equality of opportunity by any humble means open to him. He had joined an artisan's mutual improvement society established in the town about the time of his arrival there, its members being young men of all creeds and denominations, including churchmen, Congregationalists, Baptists, Unitarians, Positivists, and others. Agnostics had scarcely been heard of at this time. Their one common wish, to enlarge their minds, forming a sufficiently close bond of union. The subscription was small, and the room homely, and Jude's activity, uncustomary acquirements, and above all, singular intuition on what to read, and how to set about it begotten of his years of struggle against malignant stars had led to his being placed on the committee. A few evenings after his dismissal from the church repairs, and before he had obtained any more work to do, he went to attend a meeting of the aforesaid committee. It was late when he arrived. All the others had come, and as he entered they looked dubiously at him, and hardly uttered a word of greeting. He guessed that something bearing on himself had been either discussed or mooted. Some ordinary business was transacted, and it was disclosed that the number of subscriptions had shown a sudden falling off for that quarter. One member, a really well-meaning and upright man, began speaking in enigmas about certain possible causes that it behoved them to look well into their constitution. For if the committee were not respected, and had not at least, in their differences, a common standard of conduct, they would bring the institution to the ground. Nothing further was said in Jude's presence, but he knew what this meant, and turning to the table, wrote a note resigning his office there and then. Thus the supersensitive couple were more and more impelled to go away. And then bills were sent in, and the question arose, what could Jude do with his great-aunt's heavy old furniture, if he left the town, to travel he knew not whither? This, and the necessity of ready money, compelled him to decide on an auction, much as he would have preferred to keep the venerable goods. The day of the sale came on, and Sue for the last time cooked her own, the child's, and Jude's breakfast in the little house he had furnished. It chanced to be a wet day. Moreover, Sue was unwell, and not wishing to desert her poor Jude in such gloomy circumstances, for he was compelled to stay a while, she acted on the suggestion of the auctioneer's man, and ensconced herself in an upper room, which could be emptied of its effects, and so kept close to the bidders. Here Jude discovered her, and with the child, and their few trunks, baskets, and bundles, and two chairs and a table, that were not in the sale, the two sat in meditative talk. Footsteps began stamping up and down the bare stairs, the comers inspecting the goods, some of which were of so quaint and ancient a make, as to acquire an adventitious value as art. Their door was tried once or twice, and to guard themselves against intrusion Jude wrote private on a scrap of paper, and stuck it upon the panel. They soon found that, instead of the furniture, their own personal histories and past conduct began to be discussed to an unexpected and intolerable extent by the intending bidders. It was not till now that they really discovered what a fool's paradise of supposed unrecognition they had been living in of late. Sue silently took her companion's hand, and with eyes on each other they heard these passing remarks: the quaint and mysterious personality of Father Time being a subject which formed a large ingredient in the hints and innuendos. At length the auction began in the room below, whence they could hear each familiar article knocked down, the highly prized ones cheaply, the unconsidered at an unexpected price. "People don't understand us," he sighed heavily. "I'm glad we have decided to go. The question is, where to? It ought to be to London. There one can live as one chooses." "No, not London, dear. I know it well. We should be unhappy there." "Why? Can't you think? Because Arabella's there? That's the chief reason. But in the country I shall always be uneasy lest there should be some more of our late experience. And I don't care to lessen it by explaining, for one thing, all about the boy's history. To cut him off from his past I have determined to keep silence. I am sickened of ecclesiastical work now, and I shouldn't like to accept it, if offered me. You ought to have learned classic. Gothic is barbaric art, after all. Pugin was wrong, and Wren was right. Remember the interior of Christminster Cathedral, almost the first place in which we looked in each other's faces. Under the picturesqueness of those Norman details one can see the grotesque childishness of uncouth people trying to imitate the vanished Roman forms, remembered by dim tradition only. Yes, you have half converted me to that view by what you have said before. But one can work, and despise what one does. I must do something, if not church Gothic. I wish we could both follow an occupation in which personal circumstances don't count, she said, smiling up wistfully. I am as disqualified for teaching as you are for ecclesiastical art. You must fall back upon railway stations, bridges, theaters, music halls, hotels, everything that has no connection with conduct. I am not skilled in those. I ought to take to bread baking. I grew up in the baking business with Ant, you know. But even a baker must be conventional to get customers. Unless he keeps a cake and gingerbread stall at markets and fairs, where people are gloriously indifferent to everything except the quality of the goods. Their thoughts were diverted by the voice of the auctioneer. Now this antique oak settle, a unique example of old English furniture, worthy the attention of all collectors. That was my great-grandfather's, said Jude. Wish we could have kept the poor old thing. One by one the articles went, and the afternoon passed away. Jude and the other two were getting tired and hungry, but after the conversation they had heard they were shy of going out while the purchasers were in their line of retreat. However, the later lots drew on, and it became necessary to emerge into the rain soon, to take on Sue's things to their temporary lodging. Now the next lot. Two pairs of pigeons, all alive and plump, a nice pie for somebody for next Sunday's dinner. The impending sale of these birds had been the most trying suspense of the whole afternoon. They were Sue's pets, and when it was found that they could not possibly be kept. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.